You're listening to Trek FM.
Want to join in the conversation and share your thoughts on this episode? Join the Babel Conference, our listeners' discussion group on Facebook. Just type B-A-B-E-L into the Facebook search field, and we'll look forward to seeing you there.
This is Steve Sansweet of Rancho Obi-Wan, and you're listening to the 602 Club.
There was a little bar in Mill Valley where all the Starfleet trainees used to go.
602 Club.
You know it.
I was there more times than I can remember.
So, you hang up this late on a school night.
Where's my dad?
He's downstairs, but you know what? He told me to keep an eye on you.
My dad doesn't like you.
But you do, right? So, do you have any cool toys in your room you want to show me?
Do you know Captain America? I've got his action figure, but I lost the shield. So I made him a new one. How about myself? I just glued a magnet to it so it looks like the real one. And then I painted it, but Cap's shield is cooler. But this one doesn't have to take down any aliens, so it'll do. Super Lady, are you coming?
I'll be right there.
Welcome to the 602 Club, Trek FM's General Geek Show, coming at you from Hell's Kitchen here in New York. Anybody want shawarma? I'm feeling shawarma. Anybody feeling shawarma? No?
I'm up for shawarma.
Okay. All right. Good. I don't know why. I just maybe I too much exercise today and... All right, anyway, really excited to be here tonight. We are going to be talking about the latest in the Netflix Marvel series that they have going on, and this time it is Jessica Jones, and we will be diving into season two. And I think you already heard that I have some incredible guests here tonight. Hero-rific. So the one and only Brandi Jackla.
Hello.
Hello. How's it going?
Oh, it's going peachy keen now that I'm doing this because I've been waiting for this all day.
See, that's just great. I mean, oh, man, what a way to come into a podcast. It's waiting all day to talk about the subject. So that's good. And that's right. We not only have one lady, but we have two ladies here tonight representing the female strong, Christy Morris.
Hey, hey, I want you cray, cray.
Oh, God. Oh, that song was so bad. Oh, it was like so every bad. It felt like every bad late 90s Britney Spears song that she did, like when she kind of started going off the deep end. So, yeah.
Ooh. And it's just so nasally. Gosh. I mean, there's nothing good about it. But anyway.
Yeah, it was like it was like when you listen back to Paula Abdul songs.
Oh,
you're like, oh,
I never liked her then.
Yeah, she's not a good singer. She's not a good singer.
Didn't like her then. Don't like her now.
Anyway, but before we totally just start spoiling everything and getting into the season, just a quick reminder, you know, you can find us everywhere. All over the place, but Apple Podcasts is really the best place to go. And while you're over there, give us a star rating review. You know, the 602 Club is getting lonely. It's been a while since we've had a star rating review. So help people find us. Let us know what you're thinking of the show. And heck, when you do, I'll call you out on the show. Thank you for your review and let everybody know what you said. You can also find us wherever you get your podcasts. So any podcatcher, we're just all over the place. You can also find us on Twitter, Trek FM. We're on Facebook at facebook.com/TrekFM. Make sure you follow us there. If you want to have a more in-depth discussion, you can find our listeners-only discussion group over on Facebook. Now, to get there, type Babel into the search field on Facebook, or if you're at the website at trek.fm, where you can find everything we do, you can hit discussion on any of the menu bars. And that'll bring you right over there. And then last but not least, if you would like to contact us and talk even more in depth about any subject, you can do that at trek.fm/contact, choose a show, choose the 602 Club, and you can send us an email, and that'll get shared with any of the hosts that are on that week too. So you can tell us what you thought, or maybe you just have some ideas. And, you know, it's kind of been a while since we've gotten an email, so it'd be great to hear from you guys. But I wanted to ask both of you before we kind of dive into the season. We're going to break this down by characters because this season is definitely a character-driven season. It is all about the four main characters, but neither of you were on the original Jessica Jones show. And so I wanted to ask you kind of where you were coming into this new season, what you thought of the first one, and then were you excited to dive back into the world of Jessica Jones?
So I will tell you, I was so excited after seeing the first season of Jessica Jones that I actually went out and got Kristen Ritter's haircut and color.
There you go. Yeah.
So nice. I think you could say that I liked it. I think that it is a very dark show overall, of course, and sort of along with the other Marvel shows on Netflix right now, like Daredevil, Punisher, Iron Fist, and Luke Cage. They have that dark, ominous thing throughout that these are not necessarily your typical heroes. They have flaws and some pretty major things that they're dealing with. And so I guess I've always kind of gravitated to a character that's not perfect, that's sort of the anti-hero. So I really came into it liking Jessica a lot because she makes mistakes, but you feel like she's still trying to be a good person.
Yeah, I agree with that. The one thing I love about Marvel characters and what they've done, especially in the Marvel Netflix series, is that they focus on those people. Yes, they have superpowers, but they're also focusing on them as people. And I think that makes things more compelling. Because if you're just writing something about the superpower, you're not going to hook me. I don't care as much about that. Yeah, she can jump great heights and she's really, really strong. That's what she can do. But who is she? Mm-hmm. And season one gives us a lot of that. I had a hard time with season one, not because it wasn't good. I loved it. It was great. David Tennant was great. Kristen Ritter was great. Everybody was great. But as a sexual assault survivor, there were certain things that I was just like, I'm going to have to stop for a minute. So it was difficult to watch at times because I could identify so much. I mean, I didn't go through anything even close to what Jessica went through. Not even close. But I can unfortunately imagine it very, very well. So it was hard for me, but I loved it. I loved season one. I loved the character, and I was so happy to hear that they were finally going to do a season two. And it came out on International Women's Day. What can be better than that?
Yeah. You know, for me, season one was up and down. So it literally went up and hit about midpoint, and then it just went down for me, and it never really truly recovered. I felt like the crescendo of the season was in the middle of the season, and then by the end of the season, it just didn't end up working as well. And I think that's really interesting for you to bring out, Brandy, because, you know, that is one of the things that's different about these Marvel Netflix shows is they're about much more gritty, real things, you know, like that. Yeah. And so, you know, shedding some light on that and having people, you know, talk about something like that I think that was the best part of the show is allowing people to have a forum to be able to say something about that kind of thing, mm-hmm. which is great. And hugely important, because, you know, too many times, that kind of junk just gets swept under the rug and it shouldn't. So
it does. Yeah. And I know that, Melissa Rosenberg didn't intend for this to be an issues show, and it really isn't an issues show. It's a show about people, about compelling right. characters. And so I never felt it of. That it was like, oh, well, it's good that they're bringing up this issue. No, this is part of Jessica's past. This is part of her life, and it informs who she is now. So it was never about issues, but I'm really glad that they were not afraid to shine a light on anything. So that I really appreciated that. And for one moment, they almost had me feeling sympathy for Kilgrave. They were so good at presenting his backstory that I'm absolutely. Like, I'm almost there, but dude, you can still choose your behavior and you're choosing wrong. So sorry, mm-hmm. don't get a pass.
And they do that in this season too. When we talk about Jerry, I think mm-hmm. that they're going to really get you to the point where you try, you start to maybe identify a little bit, and then they pull it back. You know, it's mm-hmm. like, and I think that's really interesting is trying to show the humanity of every single person. And, you know, the main difference in the end are those people who continually just choose to do what's wrong, or those who do the hard thing and do the 180. And I think that's the show. And specifically, you know, I think that's the arc for Jessica this season, you know, of she has lived a specific type of life that has been closed off and kind of left her, I guess I can't think of a better term than like she's the walking dead. You know, she is somebody who has been closed off from everyone and everything her entire life. Because of the experiences that she's been through. And this season, her arc is to make the decision to live life more openly, even when that can bring pain. And I thought that was, to me, the strongest part of the season, was really watching Jessica through that progression. And really, the highlight of the season.
I'm glad you said that, Matt. I agree with you. I think that it's teaching Jessica to still try to trust people and let them in, even though she's been through the horrible things that she's been through. And like you said, make the right decision, even though it's the hardest one to make. You know, I like when she has the opportunity to kill Carl and she realizes suddenly that the voice in her head telling her to do it is Kilgrave, and that that's something that he would do, someone who can't control himself or chooses not to. And she decides to take control and just say, your life is over because of what you've done, and it's not my responsibility to take your life.
I feel like... And I'm coming I'm coming at this from my own perspective, but I think that some people feel like, and I'm talking about characters in the show, that Jessica is cold, is without positive emotion. And I don't think that's it at all. I think she cares way too much, but she has been through so many experiences where everything she loved is taken away from her time after time after time, and she can't go through that anymore. She's gotten to this point that she can't go through that anymore, and so she just shoves everyone and everything away. If she were truly emotionless, she wouldn't have to drink.
Yeah. No, I absolutely 100% agree with you, and I believe it's her mother who says to her, you know, that's right, her mother's in the show.
Oh, spoiler.
Yeah. But I believe that, I mean, I really resonate with what you're saying, because that's why her mother says, no, you're drunk 24/7 all the time because you feel too much. Mm-hmm. And she's trying not to feel so much. And it's that repression that she continually tries to pretend like those emotions don't exist that have been slowly kind of driving her mad in a lot of ways, I think. And part of that, I think, too, it you see that that's where the anger comes out when she's going to kill somebody like Carl. You know, like, that's where all the emotions finally come out. In the end, it's because there's an unhealthy balance of her not dealing with those emotions that she loses her temper. And that was one thing that I wish had been maybe mentioned in the series. Like, you know, if maybe we had some therapy and or at least found a way to release your emotions, you might find it easier to not so come so close to killing people.
Right. Like,
well,
take up
judging
boxing.
By how she reacted in anger management class,
true.
I don't think that would go well.
Yeah. But
I really
but that
don't.
Was also a good scene because she actually let out that emotion. Mm-hmm. You know, I actually felt like you could see where that could be helpful for her. You might just not want to give her something to throw. You maybe want to, you know, give her some sort of concrete block to smash, you know, instead of like a punching bag, because that's too easy for her.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just to let those emotions out. But yeah, I thought you know, for everything that she's been through, to get to the end of the season and have her go to Oscar's place to have dinner, to open herself up to that. That's the best part of this season, is watching Jessica move from point A to point B, finally. And I thought that was really a beautiful thing.
And I like, too, and since you're mentioning Oscar, that you can see from her past relationship with Luke that she was really kind of just using him as like another way to get feelings out and not deal with her problems. He was a distraction. Whereas with Oscar, she goes to treat him the same way. And he says, whoa, like, I just want to get to know you. And she's going, oh, that's new. And you're like, wow, she's never actually had a relationship with someone. She's always just been using people to get by, as far as the men in her life, you know, in romantic relationships. So I like that they are showing that Oscar is not allowing her to do that. And then she's realizing you can just have him as, you know, a partner, someone to talk to and to get to know the real you rather than just pass the time.
Yeah, but if she doesn't get back together with Luke Cage, then they never get married and have their baby, and then Squirrel Girl can never be the baby's nanny. Everything I'm saying is absolutely true.
I know, I read that.
Oh, that's hilarious. See,
I'm sorry, Matt, I interrupted
no,
you.
No. I think that's really funny because, I love you know the comics that well. That's fantastic. The only thing I was going to say is that on top of that, I felt like the relationship that she had with Oscar was really well done, because it was somebody who could kind of understand a little bit the life that she's been in the sense that, like, she's been on the wrong side of the law. You know, she's made some mistakes. You know, Oscar's done the same thing. And for everything in her life, she just wants to be able to try and live some sort of normal life, you know, the same way he is. Hers, it's a little bit more of a struggle because now everybody knows she's a superhero, right? You know, quote unquote, powered person. But that relationship and how he accepts her and, you know, they have a rocky start, but they learn to, you know, he learns to really accept her for who she is. He doesn't ask her to change. He just supports her where she is. And I think by that, it's a great relationship because it's not one of those relationships where, like, you need to do this, and this to be a better person. He just kind of shows her what it means to be a better person,
mm-hmm.
you know? And I thought that was really beautiful. And they end up being a really good couple for each other. And so, again, when you get to the end of the season and she's chosen that, I thought it was just really nice. Like, and in some ways, you know, this whole season for her, too, is about never really having family. And she kind of gets that with him and his son as well, which I thought was really beautiful in a way where... you know, she's not in an adoptive family where this, you know, her stepmother is taking advantage of her stepsister all the time, which is just sick, and twisted and crazy,
mm-hmm.
you know? So, like, she just finally gets to be Jessica, and I thought, and to figure out what that even means, you know, like,
yes.
And I thought that, again, it's just a leaving off with them in the season. It's just. Oh, finally something in this season that felt good, because the rest of the season, honestly, is really uncomfortable.
It's hard.
Yeah.
It's really hard because you don't have Kilgrave anymore. So now we have to find out who all of these people are without him. And the biggest is, of course, Jessica. Who is she without him? And who is Trish without Jessica and Kilgrave? You know, who are all of these people without the influence of Kilgrave in their lives now? And I actually really love that. I love a good character study. I like them focusing on, okay, this is the aftermath of all these things that have happened. Now they're back in real life. What now? And they're trying to find their places. They're trying to figure out how their lives are going to be now. And I actually enjoy that. I love character development.
What did you guys think of it being her mother that kind of ended up being her, you know, quote unquote, bad guy to face?
I think that that just adds to her family trauma. So I at first thought, well, maybe it was her brother that survived, because I thought it's weird. Somebody had to have survived, especially the cryptic flashbacks we saw. And so I thought maybe it was the brother. Then I thought maybe it was the father. Then I thought maybe it was the mother. And about 30 seconds before it was confirmed it was her mother, I went, oh, that's who it is. But what a mixed up thing. This person that she thought was dead, and it takes her a little while to really believe that's her mother. And now she's got to reconcile the fact that her mother is going around murdering people. It's just, oh, I have my mom back, and she's a killer with rage problems. Great. One more thing to worry about.
Well, and at one point, she's worried that her mom is going to kill her.
Yeah. Yeah. Or somebody else that she cares about. Yeah. You know, it's just, because at one point she was going to kill Trish. You know, it's just like nobody was off limits. And I get that protective thing of a mother protecting her child, but she's not all right in the head. Whatever experiments were done on her to make her alive, make her strong, that was a side effect. And then the rage problem. And it's just, and I can see things from the mom's point of view too, that it can't be easy to have that thing, just a monster basically take you over and kill. But she also doesn't seem that remorseful when she finds out what she's done, and she's burning her clothes and she's cleaning things up and just like,
Well, and yeah, she even tells Jessica at one point, that feeling you have, that guilt, it passes, it gets easier. And she's like, whoa, I don't want to keep doing this. I'm not aiming to make it easier to kill people.
No, and that's so clear when she goes to the house of that guard that she finds out is torturing her mother in prison. And she kills him in self-defense. And, oh, the aftermath of that, the montage of her just freaking out. Because she's starting to hear Kilgrave's voice in her head again. I'm absolutely certain of that. And it becomes very obvious later that that's what's going on. But, oh, man, she's just trying so hard not to kill anybody because it's so easy for her to physically do it. It broke my heart. That whole scene just broke my heart of her figuring out what to do and how she was going to clean everything up. And it was just,
well, and yeah. You feel bad for her too, because she's getting hit with so much new information all at once. That's like, not only does she find out my mom's not really dead, then it's, oh no, but she's got this uncontrollable rage problem. Then it's, oh my God, this guy is the guy that did this to both of us. And then, oh yeah, and they're in love.
And married, not legally, but she's really going, common law married at this point. So much. It's too much for a normal person, but for someone who's already screwed up like Jessica, it's a miracle she didn't just go, nope, I'm done, and walk into the ocean or something. You know, it's just, it takes a lot of self-control to continue living when crap like this keeps happening to you.
When her mom was revealed to be just that nutsoid, all I could think of was in Braveheart when the guy's like, she wasn't right, and the had, you know, like, no, she wasn't. She's like a Rage Against the Machine person. It's just, it's crazy. And I think a part of me struggled slightly with the season with Jessica and her mother, in that I understand what they were going for, Jessica having the struggle of it being her mother. But her mom needs to go to the raft. You know, like, and you need to, Jessica knew that, and she just kind of kept, I don't know, by the time that they were in the RV and everything, I was a little bit like, okay. I felt like they were taking it a little bit too far. I get why. Jessica has always wanted family, and, you know, what would you do if you found out your long lost mother was not actually dead and all that kind of stuff? You know, so I'm trying to put myself in her shoes, but I did find myself at that point in the season being like, okay, I feel like we're stretching this on a little bit too long. And I will say that I think that the Marvel Netflix shows sometimes do that with their seasons where they feel like they have to have the mandatory like 13 episodes. You're not required to have 13 episodes. You know that, right? Like, you can create as many episodes as you need or don't need. So, you know, I feel like this season probably could have been about 10 episodes and been a much better season, because I think a little bit tighter storytelling in some places would have really helped. Because by the time we got to those last two episodes,
you feel like they're kind of milking stuff that doesn't have much left to tell.
Yes, absolutely. I will absolutely say that this is the most boring season so far of any of these shows. Like, it was just boring. Like, I really was bored. And part of that was, I think there wasn't a lot of action in the show. And I was won over in the end just because I enjoyed where they took Jessica. But getting there was kind of an arduous process for me personally. So
I get
well,
that.
Well, that's fair. We all have our own opinions. And I've often said that opinions are neither right nor wrong because they're subjective. And my husband and I really enjoyed this season. So it has nothing to do with someone being right, someone being wrong. Just coming at it from different directions. And I love action as much as the next nerdy girl. I love me some action movies. Really, I love me some action movies. But lack of action doesn't necessarily bother me. And I felt compelled by the stories enough that it didn't seem like a slog. Yeah, I feel like the pacing was a bit uneven in some places. Mm-hmm. And I think that they could have shortened it by a couple of episodes and still told the entire story. But overall, I feel very positive about the season myself. That's my personal opinion.
I think that the action part, it wasn't just like, oh, there were like, you know, like big major action set piece.
Oh, no,
you know,
I didn't think that's what you meant.
Yeah. Yeah, I just wanted people to know it wasn't just like they didn't blow enough crap up. You know,
no, that's what Patrick Devlin says.
Yes.
If they didn't blow something up, he's not interested.
Exactly.
Hi, Patrick. Love you.
But yeah, I'm a little bit more in agreement with Brandy. I did still really enjoy this season. I wasn't bored, but I do feel like, in particular, Trish was kind of done a disservice in this season, because they made it out like she was one of two things. Either she was back to being a junkie and just wanted another inhaler, or that she wanted superpowers so bad that she was willing to undergo genetic editing. And none of it made it feel like she was a true friend or sister to Jessica, just wanting to help Jessica. It felt like Trish was just completely self-serving, and that made me sad.
I guess it's the apple doesn't far from the tree. Yeah. Then.
Maybe so. It's
See,
not her
that's
fault.
That's what I was going to say. I think that having her mother back in her life has influenced that side of her, and that's why she went down this path again. And yeah, I don't feel like her storyline was as strong. But at the same time, they had to figure out some way to get her to be Hellcat. So this is what they did. Mm-hmm. That's her superhero persona.
Instead of she decided
because
to
in,
do martial arts.
In the
arts.
Comics, she was never adopted by the Walkers. She was actually adopted by the Joneses. She was Jessica Campbell. That was her family name. And then she was adopted by the Jones family after her family was killed. So anyway. Sorry.
No, I'm glad you brought that up.
No, that's...
I'll just push up my nerd glasses.
Yeah, no, I love that you know that again, because I'm not as familiar with the Marvel universe in that way. But I definitely agree, Christy. Honestly, the Tristory, I just had a really hard time watching just because it was... It was very cliched of like that kind of person who just, I don't know. Yeah, she just was so selfish this season. It was really just difficult to watch. And I did feel like that. I wish that they could have found a better way to get her to that place without it kind of being something that made her character so unlikable. because she's very unlikable for most of this season, if not all of this season, and say I would say till the very last episode,
right,
where she comes to apologize and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, Jessica is still not ready for a reunion. And, yeah, and then, I don't know, how did the last moment for her, with her and Jessica, play for you when she's the one who shoots her mom? Because, again, that seems like she's trying to make this about how she has to save Jessica, but I don't think that was the, she didn't need to make that decision. She doesn't realize that Jessica's mom at that point is given up.
Yeah, you know? She didn't get all the information.
Right.
She
right.
just reacted.
Yes.
And maybe that has something to do with what happened to her with the genetic editing. Maybe it was from the inhaler with the drugs we don't know about. And I feel like if they had come at this from, I mean, if they had just tied it back to her finally knowing what it felt like to be controlled by Kilgrave, like she was in the last episode of season one, come at it from that direction. And now she doesn't want to feel that loss of control ever again. And so that's why she wants to be a superhero, is she wants to be able to not only protect herself, but protect other people. Because she couldn't protect Jessica then. She can't protect Jessica now. And so that could have been a motivation for shooting her mother. All of this could have been a motivation, but they never tied that in.
Right. They just make you feel like, oh, she's jealous of Jessica's powers. And mm-hmm. and then probably to me, it came more across like she's worried that Jessica's mom is going to take her out first. So she shoots her before she can. That's just how it comes across yeah. to me, instead of, like you're saying, you know, the way they could have done it.
Yeah. If they had just tied in that one little thing, it would have made that whole thing more palatable. I'm not saying it would have made it great, but it would have made it more palatable. It would have made it more understandable, more relatable. But it just, it wasn't relatable to me. So.
Yeah. I like what you're saying, Brandy, because I feel like that's really constructive. It's just, there's something about the story that doesn't make it, like with Jessica, we can put ourselves in her shoes and start to relate. But I can't put myself in Trisha's shoes and relate to the decisions she makes at all. It just mm-hmm. feels so foreign to all of a sudden, you know, oh, I want to be Jessica, basically. Like, and this was another thing. Like, they do the thing at the end of the season where they have the big argument about why would you want to be we, and why, you know, why would you want to be me? You know, they both are seeing, you know, the grass is always greener on the hero's side, I guess. So I don't know. I don't know. They don't do a good enough job with the thematic elements for Trish to make them really resonate as a true human experience, specifically, that enough people, I think, could relate to. So, and in that part, because she has such a big part of this story, it was just, that was one of the things that made the season less than stellar for me personally watching through it, because every time we kind of got to the Trish part, it was like, oh, you know, whereas the Jessica stuff, even though there isn't tons of action, I'm clicking with where they're bringing the character. So,
yeah, let's just all use the whole excuse of her knowing what it's like to be controlled by Kilgrave as our own headcanon and just retcon all of that and make it more palatable. I'm going to do that in future watches.
Hey, I like it. I mean, they should have just had you on as a writer. So.
Oh, no, I'm not good enough to be a writer. Oh, no, 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 no,
at
no.
At least you can just be the story person and then somebody
I'll,
else.
I'll be the proofreader.
Yeah, there you go.
I am really good at beta reading. I am good at that.
But in this season, Malcolm is another character that we are following heavily as he is working with Jessica now in tandem there at Alias Investigations. And I found his storyline to be another one that's like Jessica's, in the sense, like, you can put yourself in that person's shoes, and you can, like, the struggle of coming out of addiction and trying to, you know, he he ends up kind of replacing it with some things, you know. But I thought that they did a decent job of kind of moving him forward throughout the season, and I really enjoyed his interaction with Jessica, actually, about him always trying to get lessons out of her, and she's like, "That's not a lesson. Stop writing." Like, that stuff was really good.
I love the constant. You're fired. Okay, boss.
Yes, yes. So, and I like the actor, and I was enjoying, for the most part, what they were doing with him. I thought it was interesting.
Yeah, I feel like they are really trying to redeem him and show you, you know, who he was in season one. He's not anymore, at least in most part. He's really trying to clean up and get off all of the drugs and figure out what he's going to do with his life now, because he originally wanted to be, I think it was a social worker. And so now he's seeing, okay, I'm something more than just a past junkie, and what am I going to do with it? Well, I have a job. Even if I don't get paid anything, Jessica maybe can teach me some things and I could do something good for someone else. But I still struggled with, you know, sort of like Jessica says, he's replacing one addiction for another, where he, you know, she sees that he's got this app that's basically like Tinder. So he's constantly with a different woman every night. And then also he seems like he's still... I said, like, I think he's 80% good, 20% manipulative, because I think it was in this season where he meets up with an old friend from college, or past girlfriend, maybe.
Past girlfriend, yeah, yeah, I think
and
so.
And totally tricks her into getting something he needs.
Yeah, yeah, that was really scummy.
Yeah, you just go, like, no, he's not gonna, oh.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was hard for me too, because I thought Jessica has done stuff like that, but never to people that she knew and never to people that she liked.
Right, like she wouldn't do that to Trish.
I mean, if someone can come up with an example, but it's to take advantage of an old relationship like that. Ooh, little difficult. And then the whole thing he does to dig up dirt for Jerry to find out, you know, what they have on her, what she can have on them to keep them from ousting her from the company. And we'll get to all of that. It was inventive, but it was also uncomfortable for me, but I liked it. It was uncomfortable in a way that I'm like, okay, we're seeing who this guy really is now, because season one, we didn't get a really good feel for who he actually is, because he was under Kilgrave's control and he was using drugs to try and escape that control. Not that it helped, because it didn't. But, you know, the thing about drugs is that they actually inhibit the brain's ability to make good decisions. And so it's not so easy to just say, oh, I'm just going to quit tomorrow, because your brain doesn't work that way anymore. So it is really hard. It is a really hard addiction to come out of. And the fact that he was strong enough to do that by his own choice is really impressive. And so he's a very complex character, and I like that. And I am looking forward to what we're going to have in season three. I'm hoping there's going to be season three. Please have a season three. I want to see more of where he goes and what he does, because he goes places that I don't expect. And I don't know about you guys, but the whole sleeping with Trish thing was icky to me.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, well, yeah. And basically he gets the tables turned on him after he used a past relationship. Then Trish uses him to get what she wants and then locks him in a trunk.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I will say this. I appreciated, and this is just thinking about, you know, sex scenes. I appreciate that the sex scenes were tasteful. Yes. I appreciate that there was no topless women.
Yes.
Topless men, yeah, bring me the topless men all day long. Thank you very much, because that's not...
Malcolm buffed up this season, that's not something, just saying.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's one of those things where I just really appreciated that viewpoint, that we never saw, you know, bare breasts. We never saw really super explicit sex like we did in Punisher. I don't have a problem with explicit sex, because if I have to make a choice between explicit sex and explicit violence, I will take explicit sex every time. But I'm a weirdo also. So, but yeah, it was one of those things where that is where like, now that's why you have a woman directing every episode of this series, because a woman is going to look at this and say, there is no reason to show her boobs. Okay. We know what they're doing. We don't need to show her naked. So that's what I imagine them saying.
Yeah. See, I'm with you. I don't need all of that stuff either. And I think you can do well done scenes without all of that, you know.
Agree.
So, I would say this, Mad Men, I think, is the best picture of that. If Mad Men had gotten picked up as it was supposed to be on HBO, this is a little bit of a tangent, but, Christina Hendricks said, well, I would have been topless every single episode, you know, whereas on AMC, you can't have any of that. Mm-hmm. You know, you can definitely allude to and have, you know, scenes where people are in bed together and all that stuff, but you can't have the explicitness. The show is way better for it.
Right. Well, and I mean, my husband and I have discussed before that it feels like now, just because a show is going to be on HBO, they feel like they have to do that. And it's like, it's not necessary for storytelling.
Mandatory orgy scene in episode 4. It's like the HBO execs are like,
it's time.
Episode 4, time for the orgy.
Yeah, well, if you're going to do that, I want equal time for men and women. Because I got to see a few penises in Game of Thrones, and I was happy about it every time. So, it's well, like, there, yeah, more penises. More penises. Going to show all the women naked? I want to see penises.
But, you know, I will say, like, to your point, though, Matt, saying, you know, that it's not necessary for good storytelling, the paint scene with Jessica and Oscar in this season, perfect and didn't need any nudity.
Mm-hmm. I loved that scene.
Yeah. No, I agree.
Except I'm watching them and going, oh, I hope that's water-based paint. Yeah, that is never going to come out.
Yeah, look like fun.
Yeah,
that
I was
sense.
Thinking that too. I was like, that can't be comfortable, honestly. So where did you, so Malcolm, tangent aside of sex scenes, and where did you think about where he ended up joining with, you know, our D-bag investigator?
Chang? Yeah, Chang.
I was like, oh, really? Really? That's where you're going to go, bro? Like, that's okay. I see. So apparently you really are just another D-bag then, too.
And I wrote down, what purpose does Chang serve? He's just a D-bag.
Oh, yeah. To me, he was like, oh, I remember that guy from The Expanse. He was a much nicer character on that. Good actor. Good actor. Really impressed, because it took me about 2 episodes where I'm like, oh, I know where I've seen him. So, but yeah, he's just there to be a jerk. Sometimes you just have to have somebody there to be a jerk. But there was obviously a point to him being there, because Malcolm ends up with him. And I feel like, I don't know if this is true, but I feel like Malcolm did that out of spite.
That he's going to end up wanting to go back.
One place that would really piss Jessica off the most. So I feel like it was both. Yeah. I feel like he wanted to hurt her, and he was angry at her, and he wanted to make her even more angry than he was. And so he did the one thing that would, it actually will probably break her heart. But anyway, I think it's definitely a spite move, which is a real D-bag move. So
he's got that down.
Yeah.
Yeah. You got D-bag down, buddy. You can choose your behavior.
So maybe he's not 80% good, like I said before.
No, he's gone more, at least at this point, I would say he's like a 50-50. Like, we don't know how he's going to go now.
Yeah.
I think, we really lowered the bar in his goodness level. Like, if we had the Malcolm drawing, like in Lilo and Stitch, you know, your goodness level is... Yeah,
or like from How I Met Your Mother, the hot crazy scale. He's going up in crazy, down in hotness.
Yes. Absolutely. So the last main character that we get is Jerry. And I'm just going to let y'all talk first. So good.
Ugh.
Okay.
Thank you. Woof. Woof. The storyline was
Well, let me put it this way. They do a good job of making her into a villain, and she plays a good job, you know, she does a good job playing a villain. So, you know, if that's what they were going for, they got me. She's really good at this. But I hated her. She uses everyone. I mean, in the first season, she wants Kilgrave to help her, so she leads him to her wife, and then her wife ends up getting killed. And then now in this season, you kind of feel like, oh, maybe finally you can identify and empathize with her a little bit because she finds out she has Lou Gehrig's disease. And me personally, having a chronic illness, also I can say from experience that it's a terribly difficult thing to deal with. My whole life has changed now. You know, she was on this career trajectory of continuing to get more and more well-known as a lawyer who was just ruthless and then feels like her life is being taken from her. But then she goes right back to, she gets conned and she convinces the guy's girlfriend to kill him. She just, like I said, just uses everyone. I don't see any good deed in her.
No, there isn't, because my husband and I like to classify everyone in D&D classes. Mm-hmm. Like Jessica Jones is chaotic good and Jerry is lawful evil. Everything that she does is pretty much legal, but she does it only for her own sake. She doesn't do anything to help anyone unless it's going to help her. She is lawful evil. And so we were not surprised by anything she did because we knew she was lawful evil. And they really played that to the hilt. I still found it interesting. I know she's someone that you're not supposed to like, and I don't like her, but I still find her interesting. I still found her compelling, especially with her now not being strong, as strong as she thought she was. Now she's got this debilitating thing that has no cure, and she's researching how to painlessly end her life and all of these other things, because what is life if she is going to not look strong?
Mm-hmm.
She has not to be appear in control. Strong. Yeah, she has to appear strong and she has to appear in control. And that's what she's all about. And that's what everything in her storyline is about ultimately. And they do a really great job of doing what they did for me with Kilgrave, is almost, I can almost sympathize with her almost. And then no, she's lawful evil. So it's,
I would honestly say that, I feel like this is the part of the season where she's unnecessary to this story.
Mm.
Like, the Jerry story is unnecessary to everything that's going on with Jessica, Trish, and Malcolm, except for where they intersect with needing a lawyer. So, I don't need her in this to make this season go round, like, to make it work. If you excise all of her scenes, other than the ones where she's being the lawyer for, you know, when she needs to be a lawyer, you wouldn't be missing anything from the season. You wouldn't even know it was missing. So I would say, just putting my, you know, constructive criticism hat on, this is where the season could have been 10 episodes if you cut out of all her stuff. And I will say that this is where I was the most bored. Mm. I just didn't care about her storyline. I don't care about her as a character because she's just the side character, you know, in everything else, you know. And they didn't give me a reason to ever care about her, because there's nothing likable about her at all, you know. Like, the moment they try and give you any kind of sympathy, then they just ripped it away right again, is just her being the worst person on the planet, you know, like having the girlfriend kill Shane, you know. It's like, okay, yeah, I feel as though they needed to find a better way to integrate her story into the larger story, and I was expecting her to have some connection with Carl in some way, to try and be using that kind of technology or something. I thought that's how she would kind of get into this, but again, she just kind of is a bubble on the larger bubble. So she doesn't really matter to the rest of the story. And so, that's the part where this season, like, I just really struggled, because where the Trish storyline was like, but at least it had something to do with, you know, Jessica and Malcolm and the rest of that. This one was like, okay.
It's like a tangent. Interesting. And you're going, why is this
here? Yeah, it is kind of like a tangent. Yeah. And you normally don't get those in shows.
Right.
Like,
That's true. And I mean,
okay, let me rephrase. You do get those in shows where they used to have, like, you know, 24 episodes a season, and you'd end up going on some weird tangents, but then you'd end up coming back, you know. See the CW shows sometimes, the superhero shows, they can go on some tangents sometimes where it's, you know. But I wouldn't necessarily expect that with, you know, a 13 episode season for these Marvel shows, especially after coming off the Punisher season, which was just phenomenal each and every episode. Mm-hmm. So,
but you know, to throw in a happy note, I was so excited when David Tennant came back.
Oh, I know. Oh, it was great to see him for an episode.
Yes.
For a couple, I think he had
that,
like,
man does not age
here and there. No, he doesn't.
He just looks phenomenal.
Yeah, I'm a sucker for a Scotsman.
I wish I looked that good in a suit as he does.
But he's so good at being this character.
He's so yummy. Let's just be honest.
That's true.
Yeah, he is yummy. He's totally yummy. He's always been yummy to me. Ever since the fourth Harry Potter movie.
So what did you think then?
There you go.
What did you think then, Brandy, of the scene in Jessica Jones season one where he licks her face? My husband just went, ugh!
I was just like, can I trade places with her?
That's what I thought. And my husband is cringing beside me.
My husband, Dave, is so just, he was raised around women. You know, his mom was a single mom, and he has an older sister. So he just is more attuned to women. Mm-hmm. And so stuff like that just never bothers mm-hmm. him. Like, I can just flat out say, okay, he's on the list. All right. If I ever got the chance to sleep with him, that's my one. He's like, okay, I give him one too, but he never picks anybody. But David Tennant. I was going to say something. Oh, yes. I remember what I was going to say. I feel like they told this story with Jerry for a couple of reasons. I feel like, one, it is going to be connected in the future. I think that was an intention. I could be wrong. Two, the character of Jaren Hogarth in the comics is a man.
Hmm.
And so it is way more interesting to watch them take a woman and portray her in an unflattering light, because that's what you need to do. That's what true equality is. There are good women. There are bad women. Show us the gamut. That's what we want. We want diversity. We want to see women in all kinds of roles. And so I love that they took that character and made it a woman, and yet didn't change the basis of the character because it was now female.
No, I'm totally, you know, happy with them doing that. You know, I don't have a problem with, you know, the woman character being a bad character at all.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, yeah. And that's because you're a well-adjusted human being.
Well, and if you're going to do it, hopefully you do it right. So, because I would say the Defenders season with
Sigourney Weaver's
character, not done well.
No.
You know,
no.
Like, that's a really bad example. I think if you had just found a way to connect the storylines a little bit more, so that everything kind of felt like it was playing off each other and weaving a little bit better. That's all I think that you needed to do. So, in the end, for you guys, season two, where do you kind of come down ratings wise? So, what about you, Brandy?
Well, I really enjoyed this season. As I have said, yes, there were pacing issues and, you know, obviously people didn't like all parts of it. I would still give it 8 sleeping paintings of Jessica out of 10.
Actually, paintings of sleeping Jessica. I should say that right.
Yeah, that was a really nice painting, actually.
So. It really was. It was lovely.
Yeah.
I was very impressed. I wonder who actually painted that, because they're talented. It was probably some set decorator.
Probably.
Like, oh, I'm in charge of the matte painting, yeah, so let me just dash this out.
Exactly. It took him like 10 minutes.
Probably.
What about you, Christy?
I'm going to give it just a little bit lower because of a couple things that we already said. And my rating is going to be a 7 out of 10 skeezy hotel rooms.
At, yeah, I don't want to go to that hotel or touch anything in there.
What was it called? Like Poseidon's Sea of Love or something?
it scared the, you know, the what out of me.
Yeah,
it
was there just were like mirrors. No,
that is an STD waiting to
happen. Yeah, it just looks disgusting.
So.
Do not walk barefoot in those rooms.
Yeah, don't. But I loved
or blacklight it.
I loved David Tennant being back. I loved his lines. He always gets something so funny. I had to say, I loved when Jessica's searching the hotel room and he pops into her head and she goes, "You're not here." And he goes, "Neither is Carl." He's just so on point.
Yeah.
And then
he's magical no matter what he does.
Yeah. And then, you know, like I said, even though we hate Jerry Hogarth, they did a good job of giving us a good villain. Although I think that, like you said, Matt, her storyline could have fit better, had some more ties to Jessica's story. I think that she was a good villain. I think the one other thing that took off a little bit for me was that although I, of course, want equality for women and think that they did a lot of things well, I don't like when it's pushed too much in your face. And I think that there were some scenes with Jerry and one with Jessica where it was just too in your face. They said, you know, with the whole thing with Jerry speaking at the women in law luncheon, it was a little too much for me. And then when Jessica was in the cab and the guy said, like, "Don't get your panties in a wad." And she said, "We're adults. We don't wear panties. We wear underwear." It was like, I still call them panties. Come on. So I, you know, like I said, I don't like when the overly feminist agenda gets pushed in your face a lot. But overall, I really enjoyed this season, and I think that it did a lot to further Jessica's story, which I wanted, and get to see her mother.
Wasn't it her mother who said the thing about how they wore underwear?
Maybe it was her mother.
Her mom.
Okay. Yeah.
It was her mother, and that actually makes sense, because she muy loco en la cabeza. Yeah.
So I think that for me, this is probably 5 out of 10... whiskey bottles.
Empty or full?
Well, you know, Jessica, they're only like
only
a
empty.
Quarter, half full, maybe. I just, because I think that there's only about half of this season that I was really interested in, and that's Jessica's storyline. I wasn't really all that interested in everybody else's storyline. And I will say, so Punisher was like a super dark, probably the darkest season that we've had.
It has to be. The character's so
dark. But this one just felt like there's a real bleakness to it. Like, I appreciated that at the end we finally found something good. Like that last scene where she walks in and we talked about. So I'm hoping that season 3 has a little bit more of that to it. And I get that Jessica Jones is a super dark character. And I don't mind darkness in my superhero shows. But there was just something about this season. And I think it was probably the boredom that led me to thinking more about, like, man, there's nothing really, like, I'm just not enjoying a lot of this. Like, and I think part of it was that, whereas in like Punisher, the character storylines were very fascinating, I wasn't as involved with, the Trish one, as we talked about, there was no connection there. The Jerry storyline, and then Malcolm was okay. And then Jessica, yes, but when you have four main characters and four main storylines and only one of them is really appealing to you, that's just where I came down. So, but, you know, it's on
Fair
Netflix.
Enough.
And it's,
Fair
it's, you know, I don't, it's not really free because I pay for it, but, you know, it's still a well-acted show, and I will be interested to see what they do next. I don't know what the next season coming out. I know Luke Cage is they're working on season two, which is great. I love Luke Cage.
Mm-hmm.
I know Christmas. Iron Fist is, they're doing season two, which, they got some work to do, yes. But hey, they
a lot
got
of work
Alice.
To, some
yeah,
work,
got
they've
lot,
got a lot,
they got a lot of work.
A lot
but,
of work.
But they got Alice Eve. So,
did they?
Yeah, they've got Alice Eve. So, I mean, you know, I'm not going to lie. They've kind of got me. I'm really
they had
glad
me with my Coulter. So.
Well,
they,
yeah.
Fair enough.
Well, yeah, Luke Cage, man. Love that dude.
Sweet Christmas.
He's I really perfect. Do love that dude. Like, he is such a... Anyway, okay. Thank you so much. I'm so glad we got a chance to talk about this. And it's been a blast, you know, and really want to thank everybody who listens. Your support means the world to me. The show's been going on for a lot longer than I ever knew it would, but I'm still loving it and getting to do shows like this. And appreciate Ken Tripp and Davis Grayson being there pretty much every step of the way as associate producers here on the show. And without their support through Patreon, this show wouldn't come to you, and the network wouldn't come to you. In fact, it'd probably be a very different network because it'd be full of ads and annoying things stopping the conversation. But we don't do that to you because you go to patreon.com/trekfm and support us however much you can. Every month, it makes a huge difference, and it makes sure that all the content that keeps coming to you each and every week here on Trek FM does come to you. So again, if you would like to be part of the team and make sure that our shows come out each and every week, go to patreon.com/trekfm. We've got some great perks there for you. We love giving back to you as much as we can. And again, like I said, honestly, every little bit that you can give every month, it definitely keeps the lights on. So, so glad we got a chance to have Brandy and Christy here tonight. Brandy, let everybody know where they can find you online if they would like to geek out some more about how cool Squirrel Girl is as a nanny or other Marvel-related things that I don't know.
Oh, hey, I love Unbeatable Squirrel Girl. It's like one of my favorite comics. So anyway, you can find me on Twitter at Brandywine12. Brandy is spelled with an I, and the 12 is a number. You can find me lurking in the Babel Conference, not as often as usual, because my work has gotten a lot more difficult and time-consuming. But you will find me there from time to time. I am also on the network on Warp 5, which is the Star Trek Enterprise podcast, which I love. I'm on that with Brandon Shamatala and Patrick Devlin. I love those guys. They're great to podcast with. And I do a podcast with my hubby Dave called the Dark Corner Podcast, where we talk about such things like Jessica Jones and whatever else we want to, really. But we come at it from sort of a darker perspective because we do not like the sunlight.
So you're vampires.
We're goths.
So it's a
vampire
podcast.
We're goths. We're goths. Yeah. No, we're goths. We're not vampires.
Okay.
I can
my
go
bad.
Out in the sun, but I have to wear sunblock. But I don't like it. I don't like it. It's not fun.
Christy, where can everybody find you?
Sure. So you can find me, of course, here on the 602 Club, also doing discussing James Bond films with Matt and with our friend John Champion. And then I'm on co-hosting Galactic Fashion with my friend Teresa Delgado. And then you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Bespin Bell, B-E-L-L-E, to talk about comics, James Bond, Marvel shows, Star Wars, whatever.
Love having you guys here. You can find me on Twitter, MattRushing02, on Instagram under the same name. I'm here on the network also talking about Star Trek Deep Space Nine with Chris Jones on The Orb. In fact, we're going to be back soon, so just keep a lookout. You can also find me on the Nerd Party Network over there doing aggressive negotiations with John Mills as we dive into an interesting Star Wars topic each and every week. So if you love Star Wars, you need to be listening to that show. You can also find me talking about Harry Potter with Drea Kaufman. We're walking through each and every single chapter of the series together. We're in the middle of the Goblet of Fire. It's a blast, so check it out. And then last but not least, doing a show called Cinema Stories with my good friend Courtney as we talk about films through the lens of faith. But I want to thank you so much for joining us, and y'all come back here.